from our daughter-in-law, Erica, to hang up the wig, burn the Archbold on criminal law, and retire to join Nick and his wife in the Sunshine State, where senior citizens loll on beaches, and never is heard a discouraging word from the likes of His Honour Judge Bullingham. If the time for such an uprooting were ever to arrive, it had not come yet. I still have enough strength and health to totter to my feet to address the jury. Pomeroy's claret still keeps me astonishingly regular, and I'm still more or less profitably engaged on the sort of work which I was doing in that far-off day when my son Nick first set off to seek a newer world and found a swimming bath, an outdoor cooking device, a carport for two motors, and my daughter-in-law, Erica. I also remember the day Nick left for America, because I was then defending a customer called Mr. Gladstone in an attempted murder case which depended in the main on his own confession of guilt. Mr. Gladstone was black. He lived in Brixton, and he was just 16 years of age. I was reading his brief at breakfast with my wife Hilda, known to me as She Who Must Be Obeyed, and something in the youth and boyishness of Mr. Oswald Gladstone put me irresistibly in mind of Wordsworth. Picture me, then, dressed for battle in black jacket, winged collar and striped trousers, champing toast and quoting the old sheep of the Lake District. There was a boy, ye knew him well, ye cliffs and islands of Wenanda, many a time at evening when the earliest stars began to move along the edges of the hills, rising or setting, would he stand alone, more toast, please, Hilda, beneath the trees or by the glimmering lake, and there blew mimic hootings to the silent owls, that they might answer him, refill of coffee, please, Hilda. Rumpole, I do wish you'd stop doing your legal work at breakfast. You're getting butter all over that brief. Now, about Nick, about your son. My client today is a boy, younger than Nick, and engaged on rather less harmless pursuits than sociology. A brilliant client. I mean, he only took out a flick knife and stabbed a young man in a bus queue outside Lord's Cricket Ground at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, I mean, if you have to do that sort of thing, at least do it during the hours of darkness, and if possible, not in St. John's Wood Road. Rumpole, I'm trying to have a serious conversation. She gave me one of her severest looks. Well, I think the fellow who got stabbed took it seriously, I told her. He was a total stranger, of course. Just someone my juvenile client felt like stabbing. Absolutely brilliant. When are you going to say goodbye to your son, Rumpole, before he goes away to the other side of the world? There was a sinister charge lurking in Hilda's remark, but I had enough evidence to rebut her innuendo. I'm meeting Nick at 12, I told her complacently, in the Army and Navy stores. I'll buy him a top coat for America, then we'll have a good lunch. Steak and kidney pud, I imagine, something of that nature. I've got to get back to Chambers for a 4:30 conference, so you give him tea, and then he's off to the airport. How can you meet Nick at 12 o'clock? You'll be in the Old Bailey at 12 o'clock. She launched into her cross-examination. Again, I had my answer ready. My case will be over in half an hour. It's just a shorty. The young hopeful will have to plead guilty. Mr. Gladstone signed a full confession of guilt to Detective Inspector Arthur, who is a most reliable officer. He grows prize chrysanthemums. Hilda was momentarily floored by this answer, but she came back fighting. I don't know why you have to go down to the Old Bailey at all on Nick's last day. They say crime doesn't pay, but it's a living, you know. That nice breakfast egg of yours is probably a tiny part of the proceeds of an unlawful carnal knowledge. It wasn't an answer that pleased Hilda, and she came back with a sharp one below the belt. You're an Old Bailey hack, that's what you are, Rumpole, she said.